Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And this is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. I'm coming to you live from the Adirondacks, and I'm joined by Gal, who is in Montana, Missoula, Montana. Hello, welcome to the show, Gal.
Hi, Severin. We're actually in Bozeman, Montana.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Bozeman, Montana. Yeah, and you
but
guys
similar,
have competing university problems.
I'm sorry?
You guys have competing universities, as many states do.
Yeah, it's a similar demographic for sure.
So let's get straight into this, into the meat of the matter. You are a cattleman, cowboy man in the holistic framework, who discovered very well that there is another way to do business in bringing together other grass-fed beef, lamb, pork producers, whose methodologies and stewardship matched your own, to market collectively under the Montana Meat brand. How did it go for you starting a brand from scratch? Give us the
story. Oh, man. Like a boy in the woods, it definitely wasn't my skill set. Had to just kind of forge the way and learn as we went. Made as many but as small mistakes as possible in order to learn what was the best path for really just moving the most animals at the highest premium for ranchers, the lowest cost for consumers, and trying to keep it all here local.
Yeah, it's like ninja tricks, huh?
Like ninja tricks, like a hat trick, yeah, for sure. Magic tricks.
Magic tricks. So let's just get a little bit quickly into the economics of this to give a picture why it's worth all the hassle of being vertically integrated and cooperative and talking to the grocery stores and organizing cold storage and trucking and insurance and packing and cut and pack and labels and all this headache and nightmare. What's the alternative on the commodity?
Sounds pretty grim. Well, I'll let you know on that. We're not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel yet. But we're getting glimpses of it, and there's, you know, a lot of potential with what we're doing. We need a lot more manpower, woman power. It's a really small initiative at the moment, and it's really gratifying to make these connections. Really, what needs to happen next is just to do it at scale. We're kind of small beans for what this project really needs to be, which is a much larger collaborative, more producers, more distributors, more processors, more beef, more lamb, more pork.
Well, you can kind of see why our elders who are, you know, making decisions around cooperative marketing and the beef checkoff program and cattlemen's association and various commodity groups, why they got together in the first place for, you know, collaborative marketing.
That's
and,
right.
It makes a lot of sense the more you look at it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, we're really not reinventing the wheel in many senses. We're kind of pulling from several eras in time to create what we're doing, kind of some from the late 1800s, some from the mid-40s, 50s, when there was the packer cooperatives like in the Midwest and even on the East Coast. Missouri beef packers, Iowa beef packers, they had those, which is, you know, now IBP, much different than it was then. You know, it's an entirely different set of rules and a different playing field now, but it's really the same issues we're dealing with, and it makes just as much sense now as it ever did.
So there's two kind of major themes that I was hoping to really cover with you, and one is around the economics in the mainstream beef world and what they've been kind of doing and are looking like they're going to keep doing, and what the and just as a kind of background. And the other is, as you're looking at the market market end of your sustainable beef world, what's happening there, and kind of what needs to keep happening there for us to, well, for you to succeed, really.
Okay, what do you want to start with?
Let's start with you growing up and what your insights were from watching your own family dealing with the commodity.
Going way back. Well, I'm 32 years old now. I wasn't born on my family ranch, but raised there for most of my life, and which was a very conventional kind of family ranch, mom and pop cow calf operation. And we, you know, had about 150 mama cows at that point, and sold all of our calves to the auction or to contract markets, which at that point went to the Midwest and got fed out on corn or maybe back grounded that next summer. And then, you know, put into the big machine food system, declined our family history really goes back quite a ways beyond me. I'm the fourth generation cattleman in the greater Yellowstone area. We originally homesteaded in the Jackson Hole region. And as soon as ranching kind of got to be unsustainable down there with land prices the way they were and the changing demographic, my grandpa moved up to the Madison Valley, which is quite looking very similar to how my great-grandfather saw how my great-grandfather saw Jackson Hole in those days. So we're seeing the same pressures with the recreational market and land, and but also on the big food system, we're seeing calf prices diminish to where it's pennies on the dollar to what it was, you know, back in the early 1900s, and a gradual course downward from there. So we kind of took the initiative and started doing some direct marketing beef sales, and that led to opening buying a retail store in Bozeman and trying to sell our beef that way, and that wasn't working, so we tried to actually do the processing ourselves and not have a retail store and just do direct to wholesale accounts and consumers. But the piece that was lacking then was the marketing, so we went and tried to put some more time in that, but we're just floundering there, just trying to do all parts of the equation, like the real vertical integration that you're talking about. However, it wasn't working because we didn't have all those skill sets, and we were, you know, ranchers. I think some people will agree and sympathize with trying to do, you know, production, processing, marketing, sales, distribution. I mean, it's just a huge monster to do at any sizable, even just to move a small family ranch's animals. It would take a whole team to do all that. So where we're at now, when I formed the Montana Meat Company, we decided that we were just going to focus on that part, being the sales, marketing, distribution part, and try to do that really well and collaborate with other ranchers to leverage supply and really have kind of that branding as well to appeal to the markets that saw, you know, a band of ranchers working together to source these really wholesome products. And so that's how I came to where I'm at, pretty much.
And do you feel like the skills that are in there in that other part of the value chain are learnable and totally doable, and it's just a question of figuring out the people who are able to do a part-time, you know, hustle, being a person at a desk? Or in your own evaluation, in your own experience, what were some of those, what are the, like, overcomable roadblocks in setting up that human infrastructure?
Well, to answer your first question, I can say that with one word, and that's totally. I mean, if I did it, a freaking rancher from Montana can learn sales, marketing, you know, and all that crap. It's totally doable for some of these bright minds coming out of the ag colleges or ag degrees to pick up that and make it happen. It's not rocket science. As far as the production side, I mean, that's, you know, my upbringing, and the holistic management part of it definitely was not my upbringing, but that helped. It's definitely assimilate. People can assimilate that stuff. My wife had no experience with ranching, but took a holistic management course in college and totally got it. I mean, I see a lot of these new agrarians entering into agriculture, and it really gets me excited, and makes me excited to be on your show here. I would love to attract those sort of individuals to what I'm doing on all levels, with the production side, with the sales and marketing side, the distribution. It's all a big picture scene with you know, moving local grass-fed meats. That's just the bottom line. Big hurdles to get through. I mean, I'm still getting over the biggest hurdle, which is getting into the scale category that really makes a difference. I mean, just getting your bookkeeping on course, relying on processors and working with processors is a big challenge with what I do, and networking that to the markets, you know, landing the accounts. I mean, these are all little hurdles. I mean, the big picture is really the big thing that we're all striving towards. But no, I think it's for an entry level, for people that are motivated to get into this, to any part of this business, it's totally attainable. And you don't even have to have a college education for most of it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting history to remember that the grain movement during the kind of cooperative boom in the 1880s and 1890s, mm-hmm. you know, up until the 1940s, they were really focused on cooperative enterprise and, you know, enterprises that were yep. designed to benefit the farmers who were the owners, that were owned locally, that were managed cooperatively and democratically. And they discovered that, well, they didn't only discover, but then they enacted their insight by starting a management school to help people, you know, especially kind of in professional development context, get to the point where they could take on these positions. And I feel like we have amazing administrative capacity now, all of us. We're all our own secretaries, doing email all day and managing spreadsheets for our lives. We're almost like better prepared, perhaps, than they were.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, back in 1940, if you said grass-fed, you'd be like, what? Isn't everything grass-fed? I mean, it's really a recent phenomenon that there's this big machine that makes corn or grain finished beef in the Midwest. It's really not that old.
So let's talk about the consumer end. And you're like Frank analysis of the demand side and how much possibility there is to really grow a realistic or authentic beef economy.
Mm-hmm.
With what people are willing to pay and how people are eating beef in America right now?
Well, it's certainly changing. Grass-fed has certainly made its presence in the meat market. People are becoming more aware of the health benefits. Chefs are asking for it. And beyond grass-fed, they're asking for local, which is almost trumping grass-fed these days. There's getting to be, you know, a sizable market share for the kinds of things that we're producing. And I don't think it's stopping. I think it's going to keep going at the rate at which we purveyors can make it accessible. Some companies, I saw the Painted Hills brand out of the West Coast has now a grass-fed product. They're starting to be on some. And I don't know what's behind that. And I've even heard in Safeway or in some big stores, they're starting to get grass-fed beeves. I know some of those are coming from South America. But, you know, like with any fad, it's going to get diluted. People are going to try to put their spin on it. I think we all have to be careful in protecting what this niche is becoming. And a lot of that starts with the product. In the beginning, when grass-fed started to get popular, a rancher would, you know, pluck a steer out of the field, or a cow even, and and get it harvested and processed and say, here's a grass-fed animal. That probably turns some noses at that kind of experience. And there's some of those things that we're still trying to, you know, represent the product to those people that were turned off by that, you know, tough, chewy, low marbling steak. We have a finishing protocol that's getting dialed in by the year and consistently rates in the low choice bracket and moving up. One of our markets over in Helena got their first grass-fed beef carcass from us, and they were really scratching their heads if it was actually grass-fed. They really wondered if it was a corn-finished animal because it had the added marbling that takes a lot of regimen to get a grass-finished animal to. So those factors, you know, and, you know, the media with these films exposing what's going on with our conventional food market, it's definitely just opening up that share for us local, grass-fed, you know, the organic, the natural. They're becoming a more significant share of the market. And it's just our job to get it to that level of scale to where we can tap it. I mean, we're doing good with our little Bozeman and surrounding area markets, and I mean to reach beyond that is totally outside of our grasp at the moment. We need to have, you know, teams helping us, you know, getting a strong sales force and people on the phone, people on the ground, people handling product. It's just a lot of infrastructure to put together that, you know, I didn't have the startup to make that happen right off the bat. And I know other companies have tried and succeeded and failed. And I think as this grows, there's going to be more efforts like this. Probably an earful.
Well, we only have a couple minutes more, but I wanted to just touch briefly on how does the holistic management framework and the kind of big picture goal that you're working on, how does that help you on the everyday orient yourself and prioritize? Do you see holistic management as a useful tool in kind of more like landscape scale or watershed scale infrastructure rebuilding?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we could crack into this can of worms pretty deep, but the holistic management framework that, you know, is simply a decision-making tool can be used on any business. In terms of the land management aspects of holistic management, you know, most of the ranches that are in the collaborative are aware or have gone to the schools or read the books to gain a lot of the principles and practice them on their own ranches. We use they're not exactly called a third-party certification organization, but they do all of our sustainability criteria. The Western Sustainability Exchange is their name, and they certify all of our ranches and take that into account with how they, of course, manage the land and handle their animals humanely and how the animals are finished and what they're fed and what they're not given.
Okay, we're really almost at the end, but I have one last question.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is, are you hiring, and what are you looking for in a ranch hand young cowboy that they can prepare themselves to be a good employee for someone like you?
Okay, well, we actually have some standing offers on the table with their commission-based, primarily jobs that work with the meat company, more on the sales and marketing side. The Montana Meat Co. does not partake in the production. I mean, my family ranch is one of the producers, but you know, we ourselves don't hire ranch hands, so to speak. But for those individuals that would be interested in joining our team with the meat company, we do have like independent contractor positions, you know, offers available that are standing. Yeah, maybe feel free to contact me for learning more about those jobs.
Awesome. Feel free to also check out the new agrarian program through the Quivira Coalition. They have a list of, I think, about 13 different ranches now that are offering positions that you have to go and negotiate. It's not a push-button type thing, but they've made it a lot easier to interpret the opportunities out there.
They're great folks.
They're great folks. Yeah. Thank you, Carl, for coming on the show and for your incredible leadership. I wish you the greatest success.
Thank you, Severin.
Impressive.
I'm excited to follow your show.
Yippee skippy. See you all next week, or listen to you, or talk at you. Bye-bye.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.